Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 20, for December 19th, 2006. iPhone My Eye. It is time to convene the panel of great big brains for Mac Break Weekly, number 14. I'm Leo Laporte. Scott Bourne is here from his hotel room.
Yes.
Where are you?
I'm in Gig Harbor. We've had a major storm in the Seattle area, 1 million people without power, including me. So I don't have my regular mic. I don't have my regular stuff, but I'm with my buddies, so I don't care.
So was the Gig Harbor trip planned, or was it because of the power outage?
It was because of the power outage.
So you're staying in a hotel to just so you have services.
Yeah, wow. I'm staying in a hotel so I can be on this podcast.
Oh, you're a nice guy. Yeah,
so I'm excited.
The power is still out in Seattle.
Well, for a million people, it is.
Yeah. Wow, that was a bad
storm. We had hurricane force winds here.
Wow, has that happened before?
About 200 years ago.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, it's really weird. You drive down the street and there's, you know, Seattle's got a lot of trees. So there's 200 feet tall trees just laying across power lines. Wow. And these fools are driving underneath them like, well, that probably won't fall.
Wow.
Jeez.
Oh, that other voice is Alex Lindsay of the Pixel Corps. And he is in his Pixel Corps offices in San Francisco. Hey, Alex.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Merlin Mann is also here. Mr. Hot Dogs, ladies. He is... He is here. I love his Skype handle.
You weren't supposed to say that, Leo.
Mr. Frankfurt, ladies.
Yes, that's right, ladies.
It's it. Frankfurt's got that international flavor. He is, of course, with 43folders.com and everybody's favorite productivity guru. Both Alex and Merlin just spent time with me in Toronto doing Call for Help. We got to get you up there, Scott.
It was balmy. It was balmy in Toronto.
It was warmer there. I'm freezing my butt off here. It's 34 degrees in Petaluma. Had hard frost. I mean, there was an inch of ice on my windshield. That's why I was a little late getting here, because I don't have a scraper like you people do.
We people.
I got to warn you, I've got the Skype lie detector on today, so everything you say, I will be testing. You know that Skype lie detector? It's called...
I was so close to adding that just for this call.
The Kish lie
detector.
Does
it really work?
I don't know. How can you tell if somebody's stressed when they're on Skype? Everybody sounds stressed on Skype.
I love making changes to my Windows registry.
Oh, wow. That really did work. Wow. Should I turn it on? No, I don't want to do that. You know,
why is it that we always have to experiment with our technology during a podcast?
While we're doing the show. That's our way.
We're thinking of a new name for the podcast. We're going to call it the ADD Roundtable.
That's right, Bikes.
That's Merlin. Merlin, I thought Amber was the most ADD person I've ever met. Then I thought Alex was the most ADD person I ever met. Then I spent some time with Merlin Mann, and now I know he's the most ADD person.
Oh, come on. Alex and Amber are so much worse than me.
We're all bad. I'm bad, too.
I think that's one of the requirements of being in radio.
Well,
Amber's like a hummingbird with a laptop.
She is. She flits from pedal to pedal. I'm trying to figure out why it is. Is it that this the tech industry attracts this type, or that it turns us into ADD folk?
I think it's both. I think a lot of people who are, you know, who have these problems don't go into cognitive psychology and customer service. I think they go into a place where they can have lots of things to stimulate them, and then they overstimulate themselves because of the unlimited number of ways that they can bring that on themselves.
Yeah, I've pretty much been this way my entire life.
I'm sorry, I wasn't listening. I just was booting my Windows laptop.
Something else. He was ADDing while we were ADDing.
All right, so, okay, show of hands. How many people hate Gizmodo?
Me.
I hate Gizmodo.
So you were gullible.
No, that's not gullible. They should know better than that. I think Gizmodo deserves a spanking. So Gizmodo on last Thursday, short, you know, blind item,
which I hates anyway, says, Gizmodo knows. iPhone will be announced on Monday. Brian Lamb writes, I guarantee it. It isn't what I expected at all, and I've already said too much. Now, I'm sure everybody, including Mr. Scott Bourne, who has been salivating around this for years, thought that it was going to be... Did you think it was going to be the Apple iPhone, Scott?
Absolutely not.
You knew better. And
I'll tell you why. Because I already knew, because I know how to do research, that iPhone was not a trademark that Apple could have. It's already belonged to Cisco, so I knew this was some kind of gag.
Well, you were right. It is from Cisco. It's a Linksys iPhone.
Yeah. I knew it wasn't the iPhone, but I was glad to see all the conversation about it, because then I couldn't get dinged for bringing it up first.
I think that that's really cheesy of Gizmodo.
Yeah, I thought it was. I thought it was the journalistic equivalent of like winning a bar bet. You know, it was it was truthful, and like I got to buy you a drink now, but you're kind of a tool. You know, nothing against Brian Lamb, but I mean, I think
something against Brian Lamb. I'm sorry,
I don't know the guy, but I was disappointed because I think it could, I don't know, fanboy stuff aside, I think that that's something that it was pretty clear what that was intended to do, and that's why I think it reminds me of a bar bet. You know, you go into it, you think you know what it's going to be, and then
So only Scott was smart enough to check the trademarks. Of course, it makes sense because Apple has never called it the iPhone. It's only what all of us have called it. Apple's never said a word about iPhone.
That's our code name.
Right.
But, you know, I'm glad you brought this up, Leo, because I have an idea and I want everybody's help with it. I want to get all the listeners to start an email campaign to Apple to suggest that during the keynote, Jobs call me up on stage as the largest potential iPhone fan to help him demo the product as we introduce it to the world.
I think you should single you out.
Yes.
You should say, right, we weren't going to do this until Scott Bourne harassed us into it.
So we want to start a letter writing campaign. I want to be up on stage with Steve. I'll even wear jeans and a black t-shirt if I have to.
So just to complete the circle here, this is a Linksys phone. It is a voice over IP. It's one of, you know, they've already shipped 3 million VoIP phones, so it's nothing new. It's just another phone for voice over IP. Big deal.
Yawn. So you don't think this is just kind of a funny, I mean, like, just to be contradictory, that it's just a funny way to have fun with fanboys? You don't see it as just being a...
I think it's a way to drive traffic to your site, get a lot of attention, get a lot of mentions in the press. I think you're right with the bar bet. I think it's a trick, and I think it's bad journalism.
Kind of thing that John does all the time when he says, you know, Windows is going to buy Apple.
No, it's worse than that. Can you see any mainstream journalistic entity doing that?
No.
And what it does is it paints these you know, paints Gizmodo as being kind of somewhat less than journalistic.
Well, that's why
they are.
That's why you always get kind of short shrifted when you talk to mainstream journalism, and why companies.
That's
don't
what we're trying to get out of this, right?
Saying that's why we have to be careful, and we have to really think about ourselves more. You know, operating at the same level.
Yeah,
I think we have to take the Time magazine that was intended for the Gizmodo people away from them, so they can't see themselves in the mirror.
They don't belong in that Time magazine. That's exactly.
What did you guys think about the idea that this might just be a not just, but in part, this could be a bargaining position where Apple could come in and negotiate some kind of a deal with them to use a name like that? Or do you think they'll just use something different?
I don't think they ever wanted to call it the iPhone. That was just something we made up. What would they call it?
Well, I'm not allowed to say because I know.
What?
Blind item.
I have secret information which I cannot divulge.
Why not?
Well, see, now you can't say that.
Not
divulge it. Come on now.
I got, you know, people, because we've got this thing going, there are people deep within the bowels of Apple who, you know, I believe it was them. I can't prove it was them who have sent me stuff, and it could be completely bull.
You don't want to get anybody fired because you know the name.
No.
Give us a hint.
Well, it's related to something you probably carry in your pocket. That's all I'm going to say.
Switchblade.
That's it.
An iPod.
I'm not saying
Switchblade. It's the
Switchblade.
That's good, Merlin. That's very nice.
Butterfly knife?
He lives in San Francisco. He's got to. You know, when you're out in the avenues, you got to have a Switchblade.
Yeah, I think Switchblade was actually their second choice, Merlin.
Wouldn't that be a good name for a phone, though? A Switchblade?
That would be a great name for a
phone. They got Razor, you know.
No, but Switchblade.
Has anybody called a phone the Blade? That would be a Switchblade would be such a good name. You know what? Apple should. Let's trademark that.
Yeah, let's get going.
I like it.
I'm opening it up right now.
Okay, Scott, is the name they have as good as Switchblade?
No, absolutely not.
It's the Podphone. The Pophonod.
I can say no more because I do not want to jeopardize my chance to stand on the stage with Steve.
You're as bad as Kevin
Rose. The people who allegedly talked to you are already going to get Steved. They're going to get Steved right out.
It's too late. They know. Don't you think they look at all the email and they probably have little beepers in your pockets and you know what they did? They gave everybody that iPod Nike thing because that you know you could track people with that. Did you see that?
I did. Yeah.
You can the iPod Nike transmitter that you put in your shoe so that you can listen to your Nano and keep track of your footsteps and stuff actually transmits its unique ID all the time unless you turn it off, which nobody does. So with a sufficient antenna, broadcast it for several hundred feet anyway, with a sufficient antenna, you could track people and you could find out where they live by, because they come home.
So that means if you follow someone 100 feet behind, you'll know exactly where they are?
Yeah, exactly. No, what you have to do is put receivers all over town.
Is it RFID? I think it's
RFID, yeah.
Wow.
And it must have a Bluetooth as well or some other kind of Bluetooth-like component because it does communicate a little bit with the iPod dongle.
You know, the RFID technology in general is just amazing. We have a Pixel member who does a lot of that research, and he can tell you in real time where a box is in a warehouse within 6 inches out of 400,000 square feet with an active RFID. You know, so when we look at this stuff, it's really a technology that's both really cool and also a little frightening.
So Kevin Rose was the one who said that he knew all about the iPhone. Do you think, Scott, knowing what you know, I'm really trying to triangulate this, that Kevin was anywhere accurate?
Well, here's the thing. You know, I believe that there's no way to know what I know is actually true because people could have been sending me these things to put me off the scent. They were all sent, you know, in a way that I can't track where they came from. They used one of those services that moves your IP to Europe or something. So who knows? But I do believe that the information that Kevin has put out does somewhat triangulate with what I've been told.
Uh-huh.
Now, I'm going to use the word somewhat. Triangulate.
Hey, you know, speaking of Kevin, they've redesigned Dig quite a bit.
It now has podcast stuff, so everybody should go and dig our podcast.
Yeah, because we're not, let's see, the top podcast. Guess what the top podcast is? Just take a wild guess.
Dig Nation.
Oh, yeah, but This Week at Tech is next, then yeah. DLTV, then The Broken. Tiki Bar, that's the first one that's not, Kevin-affiliated podcast. Strong Bad is in there. Pixel Perfect, that's Kevin. CNET, Buzz Out Loud, Martin Sargent. Hey, I don't see us in here. Wait a minute. Let's find Mac Break Weekly. I'm going
to... I don't think have we submitted it? Do you have to?
What's cool is when you drill down into a specific podcast, they show you the number of digs per permalinked item, which is kind of cool.
We're not in there. So what... and by the way, they've got an ad for Dig Nation. So that's that's bad. That's really bad. I think we'll never beat Dig Nation. I'm surprised Twit's doing as well as it is. Oh, yeah, look, it has all the episodes, and you can dig the different episodes. That's quite clever. I'm a little mad at Kevin because David Prager was on Twit last night, and I got an emergency call because David kind of intimated that something was going on but said nothing. Got an emergency call from Kevin and Jay and David saying, take it out. We've got embargoes. So he didn't say anything. I mean, he just said there's something coming. Anyway, thanks for the scoop, guys.
Yeah. Good thing you got a good relationship with these kids, Leo.
Yeah, man, I don't know. So now they got news, they got videos, they got podcasts. I think that's a good move on their part, actually, to add podcasts.
Well, it's a much better use of the real estate. I'm trying to visually remember what the other one looked like.
But it's much nicer. This is much nicer.
It fills up the page a lot nicer, and it compresses a lot of the kind of... primary and secondary navigation up into the top.
That's right. They used to have that all in the sidebar, and now it's tabs at top, which is exactly how it should be.
And if you're a casual Dig user, I mean, I'm not a power user of Dig by any means, but I like the idea of having these areas exposed. It kind of encourages you to explore and go around and try different things.
There's a significant flaw in Dig. I'm starting to realize. I'd never submitted stories before, and when the James Kim story was out, I tried to submit a story. Because I don't normally try to curry the publicity of getting dug, but I thought everybody should know about it. And the problem is, I don't know if you guys have ever tried this, but you submit a story, it goes to an upcoming stories page where it falls off the front page within minutes.
Oh, yeah.
So I think the only way you could really get a story up on Dig is if you're one of the people that everybody's watching. You know what I'm saying? It's totally self-reinforcing. There's too many stories being submitted for it to be truly democratic. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I think it's one of those things where you find out quickly that nothing actually works the way you think it should. I mean, I remember back in the day in the mid-90s, we were trying to come up with systems similar to this. We were trying to track where people were going on the web, and we asked them to fill out these forms, and we did very expensive focus groups costing tens of thousands of dollars. We were building a client with CMP Media that was going to do something like this in 96, and people would say, well, I visit the National Geographic homepage, and I do this, and I do this, and I do this, and then you go find out they really spend all their time at Playboy.com. So, I mean, you know.
Well, people always lie about what they really do. You can't ask them. That's the truth. We know that.
But see, when they dig, they're doing the same thing. They're saying, I like this story. Doesn't mean they've ever read it. Doesn't mean, you know, they want to look cool. So if that's the cool story, they're going to dig it, even though they don't know anything about it, haven't read it. I think the whole idea is very good in terms of its intent. I just don't think it can be accomplished the way that they're doing it.
Well, and by the way, the way they've set this up, I can't submit MacBreak Weekly. So that sucks, too.
Why can't you?
It won't accept the URL I'm giving it.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't have a closing slash?
Because it doesn't have an .xml, I think. But let me try it again with the XML, which is not the – you know, when we do our podcasts, we do a redirect because we may move it to a different server or whatever. So normally the URL is leo.am/podcasts/mbw. It won't accept that.
How about twit/mbw?
Well, somebody must have put that. Obviously, they seeded some of those. Let me put the XML and see if it accepts the XML. No, this thing sucks.
I think that...
and no beta. Doubt that's going to really help our dig store really quite a bit.
I don't care.
It's in beta.
All right. It you have entered the URL for an invalid feed. Oh, forget it. Just forget it. You guys stink.
One thing. I think Dig is good for what it is, but I mean, it is. It's very, very popular and very, very big, and that's just in the service of saying, I think something like Dig, if you look at the open source plug, which is a Dig clone, the idea of having like a localized Dig just for a certain topic, I think, is a terrific idea.
Yeah, that's
something I'm actually idea. Something I'm trying to get up on 43 folders right now, yeah. And I've seen other folks doing. So, I mean, having like if you have this affinity group of 1,000 people that are really into something, I could see it being very powerful.
Well, that's an interesting idea.
Let's look at Dig for what it is, which is it's a site that tells you what's popular among people who use Dig. And I think in that sense, it's successful. And, you know, is it a great place to always find, you know, the top stories? Well, maybe, maybe not. It's if you like Apple stuff and you like Dig, you're going to find all the top stories.
Well, that's what I like about Slashdot is they did that early on. They got more granular. There's there's Mac Slash. And I agree with you. I think in some sense that makes more sense.
Well, if anybody's out there, what I'm looking for, and this is something I've actually gotten close to hiring someone to do, I get way too many submissions on 43 folders than I could ever deal with. And what I want to do is just open source that, basically. Say, if you have a story, and this I mentioned here because I think it's good for lots of sites. This would be great for Twit. It'd be great for us to really make it easy to say, well, you know, anybody who wants to submit a story. It goes into the queue. All the other users vote on it.
Yeah.
And then what's the part that's missing, I think, I haven't seen this done real well yet. There's a WordPress plugin, but I'd love to see a way to automatically promote the top story of the day, the week, or the month. And that would be the cool thing, some kind of XML RPC thing that would automatically promote that as a full post.
We are going to we're actually embarked yet again in a Twit site redesign because Drupal 5 is on its way. And Drupal 5 is a significant change in Drupal with lots of nice new features, including, I think, the kinds of features you're talking about. So I've gone to Lullabot and said, okay, time to spend some more money. Let's move this thing to Drupal 5. There's some support for open search. There's a lot of really neat things in Drupal 5.
Amazing how fast that application has.
I think it's really the best.
Evolved,
open. Yeah. I mean, you're in this business. I think it's the best open source CMS out there now.
I agree. I mean, I've been playing around with these since, I guess, you know, post Nuke.
Yeah.
And so, you know, PHP Nuke, Geek Tool. I've tried all of them. And this is the one that I've just seen the fastest development. It's the first one of these that I feel really comfortable going out and saying to clients, I'm not really doing this work much anymore, but saying to people, you know, if you really need a quick shake and big site, like this is the way to go.
Yeah,
it's usable.
We're getting a little off track on the Mac. Let's talk a little bit about iTunes sales. You probably last week, I wasn't here for last week, talked about the fact that iTunes sales were plummeting.
Yeah, we did talk about that a little
bit. Well, they're not.
Yeah, exactly.
So Forrester said they were plummeting.
And Forrester's always right.
Well, now I'm on Forrester.com, and it says iTunes sales are not plummeting. Press credibility, on the other hand. Turns out that the press, a.k.a. us, misunderstood what he was saying. He's actually a little miffed.
Oh, right.
He blogged the highlights. New York Times, he said, ran a fairly balanced piece on the research. Then a UK outfit called The Register, known for their credibility, decided to dive in and highlight one finding of the report that iTunes sales had dropped in the first 6 months of this year. We got treated to wonderful headlines about iTunes sales collapsing, dropping, plummeting. Now, for the record, this is Forrester, the same people who everybody's quoting. iTunes sales are not collapsing. Apple, I should point out, never releases this information. This is all kind of voodoo fairy dust. People are, figuring out, from other stuff. For instance, their credit card transaction data does show a drop between the January post-holiday peak and the rest of the year. But with the number of transactions we counted, he says it's simply not possible to draw this conclusion. As we pointed out in the report, I guess, we didn't read the report, so
I did.
Did you?
Yeah, I read all these reports, and that's the problem with all of this stuff. That's actually the problem with Dig and some of these other things. There's an echo chamber that gets built around one faulty headline.
The headline is what everybody reads.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody buys these reports but me. So, they cost hundreds of dollars, but I have a subscription to a lot of this stuff. So I get all these reports because I use it as investment information. And I look at this stuff, and I read the whole story and instantly knew that the conclusions in the story didn't match the headlines, but I also do believe there's some stuff in the research that's wrong anyway.
Well, I apologize then. Did you tell us all that last week? Because I haven't heard MacBreak Weekly.
I think I covered a little bit, but, bottom line is I get a kick out of Forrester because I still go back to the day when I launched Net Radio and we did the IPO and Forrester said, well, the internet's going to be over in about a week.
I don't like these analysts in general, but... And anyway, he says, you can't unring the bell. Apple stock, by the way, dropped 3% because of this report. This is how, volatile this area is. I will try to focus you on the truth here, which is this. iTunes sales are leveling off, he says. Apple is not in trouble. It makes its money mostly from iPods. iTunes is, and I think we've all said that, iTunes is a loss leader that sells iPods, right? I mean, it's hard for them to make money unless you buy a lot because of the credit card charges.
Yeah, they're making a penny each at best if they're not losing money. I mean, they're just barely scraping out any kind of
You buy onesies, twosies, you're costing Apple money probably. Given the
One of the things you'll notice when you buy from iTunes is a lot of times it won't invoice you. It doesn't charge your credit card immediately. So you don't get that receipt because they're hoping that you're going to buy a couple more because their minimum transaction is 25 cents. So if you buy three or four over a week, they'll charge them all at one time, and that saves them a lot of money.
You just do the math and you realize it's costing Apple a lot of money. First of all, we don't know, but we think that the cut to the record companies is close to 60%, right?
Something in that range.
So let's say it's 60 cents on the dollar. They pay very steep Akamai fees for the downloads. Say, let's say 25 cents. And then 25 cents for the credit card. They just lost 10 cents on that sale.
Yeah, and I'm guessing that they're actually, however that all sorts out, they are breaking even. But I think that if they're breaking even, it's by a razor thread. I don't think they're losing money on every song. That would be probably unsustainable. But I bet you they're not making anything on it, anything significant. But
They're making plenty on those $23 iPods they sell for $2.99.
Right.
Yeah. No, they're doing real well on that.
Well, and
I have all of them.
Josh Bernoff goes on in his Forrester blog post to say it's not Apple's not in trouble. It's the music industry that has to worry since the $1 billion a year or so from iTunes globally doesn't nearly make up for the drop in CD sales in the U.S. alone, down $2.5 billion from where they were.
And I still think as you see the music industry really trying to renegotiate with Apple, as you see all this stuff pushing, I still think Apple is moving towards a vertical market where the producers are all using their software, the distribution's going through their model, and there's going to be a point in time where it just doesn't make sense to go through the middleman, which is the record industry, to sell your goods. And I think that's what they should be most, regardless of what their sales are right now, that's what they should be concerned about. We're on GarageBand, you can make some really good stuff, or you move up to Logic or everything else, you can put together some really, really great music. And the key is what iTunes, I don't think, is very good at right now is promoting stuff that isn't really, really big.
Right.
Once you fall off the top 10 or the top 100 of any list, whether it's TV shows or whether it's podcasts or whether it's individual songs, it's very hard to find it.
Well, if you look at peer-to-peer subscriptions or whatever, I guess the number of people on the peer-to-peer networks, it's been growing very steadily. I think people are still stealing music in greater numbers than ever before.
Well, I think they're just tired of getting, I mean, everyone knows they're getting screwed by the music industry. So the thing
in a way, I think the music industry is screwing itself by really antagonizing its potential customers. It gives people a reason to steal. It's like, well, those guys are jerks, so I'm just going to continue to steal. It's backfiring.
When you're taking a 44-cent CD and selling it for $18, it's just insulting.
Yeah.
And I think people just get tired of it, and they don't feel like they owe the industry anything. They know that the band isn't going to get a whole lot of this, you know, anyway. Now, the thing is that the bands need to realize that the best way to get out of this eventually is just to go directly to selling it themselves, not trying to go through, you know, that's the only way they're going to really get any kind of real money.
I don't think there's any incentive to buy a CD for $18, which, by the way, 3/4 of the songs on it you don't want. And the music business seems
and
just
there,
get money.
Scott's kind of having a little – you're breaking up a little bit. Aren't you on Wi-Fi, Scott, or are you on a wired?
I'm on a wired connection, but it could be the hotel's bandwidth is minimal.
All the businessmen just woke up.
Yeah.
I think it's really interesting to look at somebody like Jonathan Colton, the guy who plays with John Hodgman. He's just seems like he's got a really smart approach to this. He starts out, he said he's going to write a song a week for a year. He puts all that into a podcast. He pushes all that out through iTunes. He gets this huge amount of people downloading. I mean, his song Web Monkey's been downloaded I don't know how many million times. And then a la, you know, the Ricky Gervais podcast, then it becomes something that later on, if you miss the podcast, you can go and then buy on the iTunes store. So, I mean,
is that working for him? Do you know?
Yeah, he's making a living off it. He's not coding anymore.
That's fantastic.
And that's, to me, that's you know, I don't know if that's sustainable. I mean, part of it is, like we talked about this before, but part of it is the false economy of this industry that's had its way for 80 years and then expecting everything to be like sheet music. And so maybe it's not going to.
It's like piano rolls. We did well in piano rolls.
And it's amazing. It's amazing how much of the infrastructure is still based on that those assumptions.
Yeah,
it is. It requires this legal protection of this, you know, relatively scarce physical product. Anyway, I just think there are people like Brad Sachs, people like Jonathan Colton, who are really getting this right and are starting to understand that it starts with this relationship with the fans and then builds outward in concentric circles.
Well, you can see that also with, like, Peter Gabriel released his last – he self-released his last CD. Now, it wasn't necessarily an all-online thing, but there was a lot of online support, a lot of things that were behind the scenes of him putting together his last CD, and we didn't hear a lot of it on the radio, obviously, because there wasn't a label pushing it all. But it was a great CD, and I'm sure he made – even though he probably sold – a tenth of what he would normally sell through A&M Records or whatever, he probably made, you know, twice as much as he normally would make, you know, from his royalties. And that's I think that's the thing. And there's other bands that have been doing this for a long time. You look at, like, Annie DeFranco has been, I don't think she's ever released anything from a major label. And I'm
Is
sure
that true? Really?
Well. Yeah. No, I'm pretty sure she's always been self-published.
Yeah.
I bought CDs of her, but I guess she's able to get distribution.
Yeah. I mean, you can get,
I think. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's, but I don't think that, you know, and there's a lot more people that are slowly, you know, and you hear folks that are, you know, slowly talking about this. And the big thing is eventually, I think some of these big bands, you know, the Stings or the U2s or whatever will bolt, you know, and that's when the whole thing really falls apart. And it could fall apart very quickly if a handful of really big ones decided that they would move off, you know, the system.
Hey, speaking of John Hodgman, Microsoft's trying to do their version of the I'm a Mac, I'm a PC ads. Have you seen this? I'm a Zune, I'm an iPod. This just,
I have not seen
this
it.
This just shows why Microsoft should not get in this business. This is something that they actually showed at a conference. So it's not. Let me play. I'll play the audio. I mean, you can't see the video, but just, you know, just imagine there's a guy in a suit holding a Zune, and there's a guy, you know, in t-shirt and a hoodie holding an iPod. And that's pretty much the whole story. Let me play it for you here. This is from ZuneBoards.com.
Hey, I'm a Mac.
I'm a PC. Hey, what you doing over there?
I'm looking for that new Rock On Tour song on my buddy's iPod. Have you heard that yet?
Oh, yeah, I love that band.
Oh!
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I've got their new single right here in my Zune. You want to listen to it? I'll share it with you.
Whoa, hey, watch where you're pointing that thing, man. My buddy's iPod scratches easily.
Oh, sorry. It's just that with my Zune, I can share songs and photos and videos with all my friends just as easy as clicking a button.
Yeah.
So, well, how do you get new songs?
Oh, just that easy. First off, I get a blank sheet of paper. I write down the name of the song, the name of the band, Rock On. How do you spell Rock On Tours?
I have no idea.
whatever. Anyway, then I go back home, and if my buddy's not uploading to his blog, then I go on iTunes, download the song, buy the song after giving him all my credit card information, pull the song right onto my iPod, sync it up nice. That easy.
That easy. Or this easy.
He's pressing the Zune button now.
I guess there's different kinds of easy. This is more like Sunday morning easy.
This is so bad. I'm sorry.
It's hard to listen to. It's like, oh, we gotta
so bad.
It's got that Al Gore problem where it just keeps talking and talking and talking, and it's, you know, it sounds like the result of a board meeting.
Well, I should say this isn't intended. It's not an ad. It's something they showed at a conference. And Apple does. I mean, Microsoft does some pretty fun conference production.
And the thing to also realize is that, I mean, there's a big ad agency and they really wrote it, but this is the typical problem that Microsoft tends to get into, which is that they make stuff that is like something but not quite as good.
it kind of is, isn't it? It's just like the Zoom of Mac PC ads.
Yeah, it's just that it's always going to look just like it, but it's not going to be quite as good. I mean,
to deconstruct it, the two negatives they found are, one, the iPod scratches easily, and two,
that was pretty good. That was kind of fun.
It's true. Hey, don't touch it. It scratches. Yeah. And then the second one was how much harder it is to get a song on your iPod compared with squirting it from the Zune.
Yeah, the problem is they don't mention that nobody else has a Zune to squirt too.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Microsoft's really going towards this welcome to the social thing. I just noticed.
Oh, God.
This is the awful, the really, truly awful slogan for the Zune. But I just noticed that you can do the same thing with Vista. Vista will seek out other Vista running computers in the neighbor in the room,
Squirt all over them.
Which seems like a terrible idea, but apparently that's the plan. I would imagine that they're going to do the same thing in Vista. That this is the new Microsoft model: is you will like other people running Vista so much you'll want to get to know them.
Oh yeah,
and squirt on them. I think Microsoft's a little deluded. I'm not going to say anything, but I think they might be wrong.
You want to squirt on them at their wake.
Yeah, at their wake?
Yeah, because in Canada, when they say, let's go to a social, what they call a wake.
Welcome to the social is actually a wake in Canada, which is just one more great thing.
You know, there's somebody at Microsoft that's supposed to get paid to check these things out. I want to point that out.
Did you guys see the, I don't think we talked about this before. Greg at Ideas for Dozens had a nice post called Why I'm a PC Works. Did we talk about this? And he says that he thinks it's the fact we talked about before about how the Hodgman character is so much more enjoyable than the Apple hipster guy, and he thinks that's the whole point of this, that because it's kind of pointed at PC users. His quote is, Hodgman's folksy charisma lies right at the heart of the ad's effectiveness. The campaign is aimed squarely at PC users. It's more the informal inheritor of the somewhat stuffy Switch campaign.
You're saying that the PC users identify with Hodgman?
Well, it's, you know, yeah, it's flattering. You know, he's this, you know, it's kind of funny. And again, I mean, like the reason I thought it didn't work is probably because I'm a Mac user, right? I look, you know, I don't need to identify with the Mac guy. I'm already a Mac guy. I'm already a hipster in a hoodie. But the idea of this going out and like being directed at somebody who's, you know, kind of, you know, is at least in a stereotype, the, you know, the kind of pompous, befuddled, you know, second place guy. I think it's kind of an interesting.
I'm confused theory. Though. It's supposed to appeal to PC users because they don't want to be that guy in the tie.
Well, just that, I mean, so what Greg's saying here, this is exactly how quote-unquote normal people see themselves, especially those in corporate or especially bureaucratic jobs. And I think it's
they're stuck using Windows. They're stuck using it.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, but I mean, just the idea, I kind of like the idea that, yeah, the Hodgman character is so much more kind of likable.
Yeah.
And, oh, gosh, well, you know, it's the thin end of the wedge to getting people to look at this stuff. I don't know.
Right. Maybe. Yeah, he is certainly likable. I think that was one of the problems that they had, was he was too likable, and people were saying, why is that poor guy getting beat up by the Mac?
Yeah, you'd think that, but you still, I think you can. A lot of people can actually identify with the troubles that he's talking about. You know, with
right.
PC. I think that's the thing. People can identify with him, but they can also identify with the trouble.
And
that
also
he's
the defensive,
about.
The kind of defensiveness of being a Windows user nowadays.
Oh,
you know?
I know.
Hey, I'm going to jump the track a little bit. Have you guys seen this building controversy over Mac Heist?
No, you know, I have to say, you've talked about Mac Heist a couple times without me. I tried Mac Heist, and I thought. First of all, you know, when they first started off, you're supposed to do this whole spy thing. Uh-huh. And you're supposed to send an email to this guy and ask him for some code. I sent an email to the guy. He said, I have no idea what you're talking about. So I'm like, so I said, okay, I give up. It's too too complicated for me. And then they changed their model. Right now you buy a bundle of programs for $49.
Well, they did, and that's where the controversy has been building, is where the money is going. So they
say $190,000 for charity.
There's a certain percentage that's going to charity. What they've the update.
They don't say what charity, as far as I can tell.
Well, they said it is, but they've reported 14,000 units sold of this for a total revenue of about $640,000. This is according to DaringFireball.net. This is a blog
John
post
Gruber.
Here.
Yeah,
And it says he's currently estimating that they're paying the grand total about $70,000 or less to the participating developers. Now, evidently, I think that what happened was it sounds like they did a lump sum, just telling the developers, we're going to pay you. And what it says in here, an estimate of $12,500 per.
It's a good
developer.
Deal because for $49, you got Devon Think, you got Delicious mm-hmm. Library, you got TextMate, you got Newsfire. I mean,
it's a great deal. What it sounds like though is what they weren't willing to do is do a percentage with the developers.
Well, the developers accepted the deal.
The TextMate was, I think TextMate was one of the two apps that was locked until they reached a certain amount of.
Oh.
Yeah.
See, that bothers me. So if I spent this $49, I might not get licensed copies of these programs.
But they passed all of the expectations.
They all do.
Now the big question now is that they've made a lot of money and. The assumption is they've made somewhere between $300,000 and $400,000 of profit, where each developer is making all together is $70,000. Now they made the deal. This is an experiment. It's a 1 week experiment. Let's see how it goes. They made the money. They're going to get their check. But I mean, this is kind of a.
Did any of you do any of the so called missions? I mean, that was what stopped me cold.
I can't play any game. I don't.
Yeah.
I live in a world where I remember we used to just have to buy things, Leo.
Yeah.
We used to just go to the grocery store and give them money. Now you got to have a secret code, a secret handshake, a special card. You know, who wants to do all that work just to buy something?
Yeah. No, I think they're looking at things like Woot, which have been phenomenally successful.
There is something. It does attract a certain. When you have people, a large number of people who. Who went through whatever that is, they're far more likely to buy stuff. And that's, I think that's.
Do any of you use Woot?
No.
Do you know what Woot is?
I don't even know what Woot is.
Merlin, you know what Woot is.
Do I know what Woot is? What is that?
Woot.com.
Woot! That was real successful, Leo.
No, I'm sorry.
It is real successful. Maybe it's mostly with Windows.
Tell us what Woot is.
It might
no,
be
I've
with.
Used, no, I've used Woot. I thought you meant an app. Yeah,
no, Woot.com. It's a website where they have one deal one day. It's obviously some vendor who had a bunch of closeouts and came up with. What I think is interesting about Mac Heist and Woot is there are new ways to merchandise stuff that seem, in the case of Woot, the game element of it, you got to get in there, find out what it is, you got to buy it before it sells out, has actually driven a lot of sales. It's been very successful for them.
That limited time only is very effective.
And it's just one product, one day. I know a lot of people who buy stuff from Woot, and there's a lot of web buzz over Woot. I think Mac Heist is trying to do the same thing, and... I think they were a little disappointed that people weren't willing to play these elaborate games to get, cheap software.
Gruber's got back on Daring Fireball, I think the post that Alex is referring to, is it the Iniquities of the Selfish, that one, Alex?
Yeah.
He's got a pretty detailed analysis of how this all breaks down, including some numbers he came up with. That's worth checking out if you're interested in this story.
And I think it was a good idea. I do think that it would be more equitable, and I think they'd have a lot less trouble. And this is an experiment. They did what they, everyone signed in for it. No one got, no one was wrongly remunerated. But I think that it's easier to work through if they work out some kind of percentage, whether it's 20% or 30% or whatever. It's just a lot simpler for everyone. And if it's really successful, everyone feels like they got their cut. I think he'll have a hard time having people after this. He'll have a hard time getting people to come back and do it again if he's not giving a percentage. From someone who does a lot of these, does a lot of percentages.
Who is he? Do we know? Who is Mac Heist?
I was assuming it's Philip Ryu.
Because he did. It looks very much like that. I would bet it is because it looks very much like the.
Yeah.
That game, what was that, where we had to pick? You and I were both judges on that.
Right.
The Mac developer thing.
Yeah, the Dream App. My Dream App.
Yeah, it seemed like the sequel to My Dream App. By the way, I've got to give points to John Gruber for calling Brian Lamb of Gizmodo a jackass. The Jackass of the Week award he gave him. And by the way,
he could be the worst web person in the world.
And by the way, yeah, he is now. And by the way, apparently, I didn't see this. Brian Lamb on Gizmodo apologized. He said, "Mac heads," Right there, you know he doesn't like us. Including those from Mac Rumors Think Secret, the unofficial Apple weblog, and Cult of Mac. No, Apple likes to release gear on Tuesday, so they probably didn't expect an Apple iPhone. Oh, he's saying we should have known better.
Oh, great.
Even after my original post. If you did read into it incorrectly and feel like I misled you, apologize. Apologies for the discomfort. Oh, he's a turkey.
Yeah. Oh. I think this is one of those things that can, I'm not sure if it will, but it can really damage a site for a long period, especially when you react badly.
I will never read Gizmodo again. You have my word.
I think we should create the MacBreak Weekly seat of heat and invite him on to defend himself.
I don't even want to talk to him. He's a bozo, and he's not. And I will never again quote stories from Gizmodo. Engadget for me.
I declare Gizmodo dead to me.
You are dead to me.
Engadget. That's a little harsh there, Leo.
He's dead to me.
I think he deserves it. God, now I really don't like him. That was a snarky apology.
Yeah, that was bad form.
So, all right, real quick, because I think Merlin submitted this, and I think it's a great idea. What do we want to see in OS 10? This is this starts with a post. Why don't you set it up?
This was in Computer World. There's a post, and I'm announced
15 things Apple should change in Mac OS 10.
From Computer World, of all people.
And this was a mixture of their Mac editor and their PC editor, really looking at all the things that that they should change.
It looks to me, though, more like
if you want to be more like Windows.
More like Vista. It's exactly what it looks like to me. How OS X should be more like Vista.
So instead of covering that, let's just look at what do we want to see? What would we like to have changed between it? Leo, what would you change?
In OS X... Wow, this is tough. I mean, now are we talking about Leopard or Tiger? Maybe these are things we'd like to see in Leopard. How about that?
Okay.
I'd like to see, and I think it's in there, virtual desktops. I think that would be a big improvement. I think every operating system now should have virtual desktops. I'd like to see virtualization built in, although I have to say Parallels has done such a spectacular job with their coherence technology that...
it looks great.
There's no reason really for Apple to do anything more with that.
Right.
I don't know. I it's hard for me to think of something that bugs me about OS X.
I think the thing that bugs me probably on a couple times a day, maybe 10, 15 times a day, I think, is I just really want to turn the dock off. I understand. I can't believe.
You're a Photoshop guy, and that's why.
No. I'm a user of app graphics applications.
You're beyond hiding it. You want to be able to.
No, because it keeps on popping out. See, no matter where I put it, there's a dialog box near it, and so every time I go over towards my dialog box, and every time I go to the bottom or to the side, I'm constantly moving it around trying to figure. And sometimes now I've gotten to the point where I move it around depending on what app I'm using, and it's fine to have it there. It's just that I can't believe they don't give us the ability to turn the. You know, the
dock
off,
isn't that useful either. I mean, most guys who really use the Mac heavy hardcore very rarely use the dock, right? Yeah, am I wrong?
I hate the dock too for the very same reason, Alex. It's no matter what I'm working on, it pops up.
You might want to look at a couple of the apps out there for hacking on the dock. Something like go ahead.
We wrote an Apple script that would take the dock out. So it would actually delete the dock app.
Yeah, you can turn it off, yeah.
It would move it and turn it off, but the problem was it causes Photoshop to crash. So yeah,
it's not so good.
But something like Transparent Dock or something will give you more granularity over where you can put it rather than just those three corners.
Let's talk about the dock.
I can post it into the trash can.
Is the dock the best way to show applications you use a lot? I don't know.
No, but the OS X's not about having a best way to do anything. It's about having any number of affordances, and so sometimes I want to drag onto there, and sometimes I want... I mean, I don't
disagree. Do you use the dock... A lot.
The only time I use the dock, I use it for two things. I use it for monitoring something, and I use it for dragging. That's about it.
And I use it a lot. It's not that I don't use the dock, and it's not like I never want to use it, and I don't want them to get rid of it or anything else. It's a great, and I have it like the little one where it zooms up and then, gets all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But I just want to be able to, I just want the one little option to say, I just don't want it to ever come out. Hide it, and then don't.
Turn it
bring
off.
It out until I ask you.
Yeah, and it's maybe just do something like just add a meta key that has to be pressed for it to pop up or something like that.
Well, just to have a preference, just to say, where it says hiding under dock, I just want to be able to go up to dock where it says hiding and then just say hiding, you know, permanently, or you know, one little additive there that just hides it and then won't bring it out until I turn that feature off again. You know, I just, you know, I just want to be able to, and I have to admit that I would probably stop you. If that happened, I'd probably turn the dock off and I'd never look back. I love the dock. I use it all the time. I have a whole bunch of servers in it. I have, you know, all this other stuff that I use, but I would still never use it again if I was able to turn it off. And maybe that's why they don't do it, is because half the users would stop using it completely. You know, I just, it's just that it gets in my way all the time. I mean, all the time. And it's just, it's
Merlin,
just,
all right, enough. That's Merlin, what don't you like? What would you add?
Well, I think any kind of OS X list has to start with the Finder. I think a basic rethinking of the way that the Finder is put together, and both visually and under the hood, it really feels like it needs an update. And so, like, I use Pathfinder.
As do I. Yeah.
Which
I think the response to a lot of these things is there are lots of good third-party apps that do many of these things.
Yeah, I would be surprised if there weren't something. I understand Alex is making a slightly different point, but I would be surprised if there weren't something that could at least in some way kind of destroy the dock, at least between logins.
If you could make Finder better, what would you do? One or two things?
I mean, I think one thing, it's so funny, once you become somebody who uses Quicksilver for a while, you start to realize the numerous deficits of the Finder. And so to me, Quicksilver fixes some of these things and Pathfinder fixes other of these things. Yeah. But for example, I've gotten so used to the idea of tab browsing in a browser, or for that matter, in Transmit, which I love. I really like the idea of being able to move files around through tabs rather than having that windowed experience.
And Pathfinder does that.
Yeah, Pathfinder does. It's almost too much. And then really quickly, my other one is very purely 43 folders-esque, which is just much, much, much more control and granularity over all kinds of notifications out of iCal and mail.app, and to not have to hack that stuff together with Growl, but to give me a lot more granularity in how I do things like snoozing alarms and things like that.
I do like Growl, though, boy.
I love Growl.
I love Growl. All right, Scott Bourne, what would you change in OS X?
I'd make Spotlight work so that an old guy like me understands it.
I don't think Spotlight is a success at all. And I have to say, the search that Microsoft has done in Vista is so much better.
Yeah, we just don't have a good search tool. And I want a better search tool, so that's my hope for the next version.
That's one nice thing about Pathfinder, is if you love like the OS 7.8.9 style of searching, Pathfinder gives you three ways to search. You can search using Spotlight. You can search just inside of, like, say, one folder by just filtering strings. So just show me everything where these, you know, characters appear. Or you can do Spotlight, you can do full search, you can do totally old school Mac searching, where it'll just search your hard drive.
I find that kind of confusing, though, because I never know what kind of searching I'm going to get, because I haven't figured it out yet.
There's a pull-down menu you got to deal with. But again, I mean, like, to me, if I were on that team, on any of these teams, I would be looking to the ways that people are obviously are like developing these compensatory muscles to make up for these deficits in the basic OS.
Yeah, I agree with you, Scott, though. In fact, I turn off Spotlight on my laptop because I just never use it. It doesn't make sense to me. And I think Quicksilver does so much. I mean, I live, as Merlin does, I live in Quicksilver. And there's really no need for me to do anything more, frankly.
Well, not to mention the fact that if you're a pro audio guy like me, Spotlight really can screw up applications like Pro Tools, because the indexing of the drives causes Pro Tools to hiccup.
That's why I turned it off on everything. I just don't want it to be indexing because I don't use it. All right, real quickly, we only have a few minutes left. Let's do our picks of the week. Who first? Who?
I'm ready.
All right, Scott, go ahead.
Remember the Osborne, Leo?
I do. Why do you ask me?
Because you're the only one on the panel as old as me, or close to as old as me. Well, I kind of like that old simple word processing deal where you just had a big blank screen and a blank cursor and away you went. Yeah. And there's a product out in beta called Write Room.
It's pretty cool.
That lets you emulate any kind of color background you want. And so I've got the old amber look that the amber Osborne had, so that I could just see my word processing and nothing else gets in the way. It just takes up the whole screen. And it's a shareware, and people should try it out. It's Write Room, WriteRoom. Sometimes you just want a simple word processor, and we know, you know, we've talked about some other ones that are good. We've talked about Text Wrangler and Text Edit, but this one has the ability to fill up the screen.
Yeah, I agree with you. Merlin, you'd like this. It's very clean.
Yeah, I featured, this is one of the many full screen mode writers we featured on the site, and it's something that geeks like me can really benefit from, is having that lack of distraction, you know. That's a nice app, and it's come a long way pretty quickly.
So Merlin and I like the same app for the first time ever.
But Merlin still has to pick one of his own. Merlin, what's your pick of
the day? Oh, gosh, I feel bad because I got this off of Delicious, and I want to credit the person who gave it to us. But I just discovered via the MBW Ideas tag something called Main Menu. And their site has been a little pokey lately. It's S-A-N-Santa-S-W. But Main Menu, if you guys are familiar with things like what? Like Cocktail and Onyx and all of those apps that are really kind of a front end of usually to the Unix utilities that you have kind of under the hood. Main Menu, if you're like me and you're always kind of fiddling and fixing, Main Menu hangs out up in your menu bar, and you pull down, and it has the maintenance scripts, all the daily, weekly, monthly scripts, disk utility access. You can rebuild Spotlight and pre-bindings. You can clean your caches, do stuff to the Finder, all that kind of sexy Onyx sort of stuff that we all, the rubber chicken stuff that we do when things start behaving oddly. And it's got a little bit of configurability, so you can, if you're a smart doobie, restart or log out after you've made changes. And it's just a great quick way to jump straight into these tasks that we all need to do.
Cool. Sounds good.
Main Menu.
Main Menu. And Alex?
Okay, so I have one that I'm pretty sure I haven't talked about before. We picked Transmit a while ago.
Love Transmit so much.
Which is just,
you know, I use it a couple, you know.
I think we did a little Transmit thing too on Mac Break, so if you want to see some of the features.
So, but another thing that Panic makes is a little application called Desktastic. Desktastic. It's hard to say, but very useful. And what it allows you to do, I think it's like $10. And what it allows you to do is actually draw over your desktop. So if you have a Wacom tablet or even a mouse, you can draw over top of anything. And so and what this is really useful for, if you're doing a presentation or something where you want to show something or talk about it, you can have it float over. So you can be using Final Cut Pro, or you can be using whatever you're using, iMovie, and be circling stuff and doing it. Now, if you combine this with something like Snaps Pro or iShowYou, and iShowYou is only $20, and I talked about that in the past. Between those two, for $30, you end up with a Desktastic and iShowYou, and you can do you can be working in your application if you want to do a little training for people, which I do a lot of, or if you want to ask questions of other people that you're working with, and you want to say, I'm having trouble with this area here, or I'm trying to do this. It's this great little application that lets you basically, you know, draw a pen over top of everything. And it's, I use it a lot. And
we use it on the Call for Help. Ember used it a while, and it was kind of neat.
I think it works. You have to get a little used to it. You have to program your
pen. That was
the
problem, because you're really not drawing on the window. It's kind of a little weird.
What you have to do is you have to program your pen for hotkeys. And once you program your pen for hotkeys where it says be above or be below or let me erase, and then it works really great. But it does take a little bit of learning to get kind of into it.
And you use that for the Road to 1080p?
For the original Road to 1080p's, I did that. And when I'm giving feedback within the Pixel Core over top of movies, I'll play a QuickTime movie and draw over it. And that's exactly what I did for the Road to 1080p. Now, the newest ones, those are just stills, and I just did that in Photoshop. But I could do the same thing if I was playing back movies. And I'm going to be using it for Inside the Black Box for a couple future episodes coming up soon.
Cool. Very cool. My application's a game. Do you mind? Would you like to play a game? Shall we play a game?
This one,
you'll remember this, Scott. Turnabout is fair play.
Ah, yes, it's old.
You remember DOS?
Oh, I love DOS.
Remember the classic DOS game, Scorched Earth? It was a tank battle game.
Oh, I love that game.
Oh,
That and Zork.
Yep. Well, wait till you see Scorched 3D. And I have to thank Mike Lazzaro, MrFreeFile.com, for showing me this one. It is not just Mac. It's Mac, Windows, Linux. You can play Network against any of these other guys. It is, if you ever played Worms, it's kind of the same idea. You're on a beautiful 3D island and you're taking pot shots at each other. But they've gotten it's become quite an elaborate world. It's absolutely free. People are actually making money at it. You can play with up to 24 other players, mixing computers with humans, changing environmental conditions. At the end of each round, you get to buy stuff using the prize money you made from previous matches. It is kind of one of those addictive games you may not want to put on your system.
What's the URL?
Scorched3d.co.uk. It's absolutely free. Don't download this. I got to warn you.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Leo.
I just ruined the rest of your week. It is so much fun. But if you guys want to play against each other, we'll set up a little Scorch 3D setup here.
I'm trying to hold my hand back. I'm like,
it is really, really, really fun. I actually am downloading it. I'm going to put it on. I have a Windows laptop and a Mac laptop. I'm going to put it on each because we could play cross platform and bring it to Mexico so that my son and I'll have something to do in between margaritas.
Kids love margaritas.
Between the senoritas and the margaritas, there's just nothing like it.
And yeah, I don't know, if you have a baby, if you just rub a little bit on their gums, it'll help them go to sleep.
Oh, absolutely.
That's a good tip.
Okay. Now we've just gone too far. We're going to be Brian Lambed out of existence here. I've just created a new verb.
Been lambed. You're on the lamb.
He's been lambed. Oh, that story. That's a lamb.
Yeah.
Oh, I like it. Oh, we're going to get Brian Lamb. I'm going to punish him. I'm going to punish him forever.
He's hurt you, hasn't he? He's really hurt
you. He's hurt me. And I think, Scott Bourne, you should join in. Oh, you knew. Oh, you knew. Oh, you're so smart. You knew. Oh, they didn't have the trademark. It was this guy. Oh, you knew. You could have told me.
Well, you know, you never let me talk. In fact, let me quote you. Last time we talked, you said, that's it. No more iPhone stuff until the Mac break, till we get to Macworld. So, you know, I couldn't tell you because you wouldn't let me.
Hey, Leo, before we sign off here, I just want to remind everyone that we will be at the Apple Store on the Tuesday of Macworld.
Now, we're not there the day Tuesday. Of the keynote. We're day, the day
yes, it's the day of.
Oh, the keynote's Tuesday. It's the 9th, Tuesday. Not the 8th.
Right. It's Tuesday. We're going to be at
I thought
the
keynote was the 8th.
Nope, it's Tuesday the 9th.
Okay.
Yeah, Tuesday the 9th. And we're going to be at that evening. We're going to be at the Apple Store in San Francisco doing a live Mac Break Weekly.
What time?
6 o'clock.
And if you can't be there in person, don't worry, because we're going to do it in Dolby headphones. So it'll be just like Scott Bourne's floating above you.
That'll be scary.
And if you're going to Macworld, it's a couple blocks
it's
away.
Two blocks from Macworld. It's two blocks from the Moscone Center.
And Market.
And then Adam Christensen of the MacCast is doing a Mac Podcasters meetup, which I think many of us will be at Thursday at the Mac Store.
Yep,
there's going to be a lot. This is going to be a fun Macworld. I think we're going to have a great time.
We're going to be doing tons and tons of coverage
on Mac Break.
Mac Break Weekly and Mac Break. Both of them, I think we're going to be really doing a lot of work. So
going to CES just so I can be a part of this, because it's going to be so much fun.
We're going to have two special iLive zones, which are nothing but Mac World coverage.
Fantastic. Twit.tv is going to be your home for Macworld coverage. And everybody's going to say, where's the CES coverage? And we're going to say, go to Dig. find something else.
Right.
You've been doing a great job, by the way, on Mac Break with the Road to 1080p. For those who really enjoyed those Road to 1080ps, there are now three new parts.
I think there's three total.
Yeah, 4, 5, and 6. So
yeah, and we just had so much good response for it, and we've just done a lot of reorganization, and so we figured we'd show people where we were at.
Excellent. Yeah. I think that wraps everything up. Any other announcements anybody else wants to make? The iPhone, anything?
I do want to talk about my new movie, Leo.
Your new movie?
I'm working on a movie project.
Casino Royale.
No. You've heard of Ruby on Rails.
Yes.
Well, I'm involved in a new movie called Booby on Braille. And it's about a blind guy who gets the HR job at Hooters.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, with that, it's time to say so long. We'll see you next week with Mac Break Weekly. I am so embarrassed. You had to bring it down into the gutter, didn't you? I guess I started it, didn't I, with margaritas and senoritas.
Yeah. And then you don't forget to say our new ending, Leo.
Well, what's the new ending?
Mac Break is broken.
Okay. Is that really what you want to say?
Another Mac Break.
Another Mac Break has been broken.
Okay. And now another Mac Break has been broken.